Blog Talk Radio.
Once again, welcome everybody to Callous Remarks with Joe Stasiak and Steve Callous on this, the 21st of December, 2016, just 4 days away from Christmas 2016. We're going to take a look back on week 15, look ahead to week 16, which begins tomorrow night in Philadelphia. And of course, can't do a show without the star. He is Steve Callous, and welcome again, my friend, to another week of Blog Talk Radio and Callous Remarks with yours truly and yours even truer.
Always good to be with you, Joe. Looking forward to it.
Always, my friend. Always. Hope you're doing well. Of course, we're doing the show on Wednesday. Thank you for being flexible, my friend. We usually do it Tuesday at 5:30. You know, I'm looking up and down and going over my pregame notes and preps and a lot of things we can lead with. I'm going to start in a place that's near and dear to your heart. Those Giants. Those New York football Giants, believe it or not, the quietest 10-4 record I've ever seen, I think. And but they've been doing it with defense and just enough offense, and they beat a very hot Detroit Lions team this past Sunday. They've yielded only 13 points in the last 2 weeks and wins over Dallas and Detroit. And, of course, they're in Philadelphia tomorrow night, can clinch a playoff spot if the Eagles allow them to. They can play spoiler at least for another week, but we'll get to the Eagles in a little bit. The Giants can make the playoffs first time since 2011. Steven, here we are. You know, they've knocked off, they swept Dallas. To add to their resume this year, here we are after 14 games. Your thoughts on the G-men?
I think the Giants are winning because I refuse to pick them every week, and I won't pick them this week either. But really, it's even a bigger, everyone's saying, oh, this is just like the other times they got hot at the end of the year, blah, blah, blah. Well, they're not getting hot at the end of the year. They won a bunch of games, again, not against the greatest competition, but they won 6 in a row, essentially, in the middle of the year. They spent $200 million on that defense, so maybe Tom Coughlin gets the Jacksonville job and tries to beat the Giants the next time he plays them. But he's got to be furious at all of this. But I think they're for real, more so, in my mind, than the other 2 years, because even though they were good at the end of the year the other 2 years, they were 9-7 and 10-6. The 9-7 Super Bowl, the worst record in the history of the NFL to win the Super Bowl. You probably know that. So I view this to be even a stronger team, and their offense never was what I thought it was going to be. And I think that's mainly because of the inability, frankly, of Victor Cruz to get back to being Victor Cruz. And they just haven't, Beckham's a freak. We all know that. You get him on that six-yard slant, he might score a touchdown. And Shepard's a very good number two. But I thought Cruz would be the number two and Shepard would be a solid three. And that would give Eli plenty of really good options. And it hasn't quite worked out that way. So, yes, while they're winning offensively, they're certainly not scaring anyone. Although I will say I like Perkins, this young running back out of UCLA, because he's not the power back. He's more of the dancer. And we've seen more of these dancers this year. I mean, there's a bunch of these guys. I'm sure we'll talk about Tyreek Hill and what he did the other day, untouched for 69 yards for the Chiefs. And you've got those guys who are just Le'Veon Bell, the ability to be patient and run behind your blockers. This is a different kind of back. The Patriots have a couple now that they're healthy again. So I think Perkins is a guy who can help them more. Yes, he's a young guy, but he had 11 rushes for 56 yards the other day, and that's a pretty solid game against the Lions' front seven. So I think the Giants are for real, and again, Seattle coming back to the pack. But Seattle looks like a Jekyll and Hyde team now after watching them again, 7-0 at home and got thrashed a couple times on the road. So I think the Giants are for real. Do I think they can make the Super Bowl? I do. I still pick Seattle, and if you told me to pick today again, I would still pick Seattle. But Seattle has come back to the pack. But if they can get I think they can beat Dallas. Can they go to Dallas and beat Dallas? Not what I've seen. Can the Giants go to Dallas and beat Dallas? Absolutely, because they already have, and then they beat them again. So I think the Giants are for real. They might do Seattle a favor if they could beat Dallas earlier on, and then the Giants have to go to Seattle because that'll be a tough game. But Seattle is really, you know, I've said for years, their defense travels, and you can only point in my mind to Earl Thomas not being there, and that's why they're kind of back in the pack. Not back in the pack. To me, they're still ahead of the pack, but they've come back to the pack in terms of vis-a-vis the other teams.
Yes, they have. And I do want to touch on Seattle and what they did to the Rams the other day, bouncing back from that big loss with Green Bay the week before. But you have a team that's won 8 of 9 games in the Giants, and they're on the precipice of clinching a playoff spot, first time since 2011, when they did go on to win their second Super Bowl. And you have a team, you know, the Eagles have lost their last 5, and they made a run, a little too late. Missing on the conversion against the Ravens, but they did come from 10 points down with 6 minutes left. I did like the aggressive call. They had nothing to lose really against the Ravens, and I would take my shot with 2 yards versus another whole quarter possibly going up against a better quarterback, you know, a Super Bowl winning quarterback in Joe Flacco and a better defense. Didn't get it done. Can the Eagles, this might be one of those games because I don't want to call it the Eagles Jekyll and Hyde at 5-9, but at home they play a lot better than on the road, and it's the Giants. Is this one of those games you throw out the window and let the chips fall where they may? You throw out the records, I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, this is Eagles-Giants. You know, it's been like that forever, and I think you absolutely can throw it out. You know, Wentz has been better at home. The Eagles have been better at home. Wentz, you know, last time we talked about him, I was saying he was Harry Houdini, even though in defeat. Last week, and here, you know, they went for 2 the first time they got it, right? They went up 11-10. They went for 2 the second time they didn't get it. And I agree with the what do we have to lose deal, and it was a huge game for the Ravens, obviously. But, you know, you got to give the Ravens credit. They did get the job done, but I thought the Eagles put up a great fight, and they are better at home. Do I think they can beat the Giants? Yes. Would I pick the game either way? No. So I think the Eagles, you know, the NFC East turned out to be much better than certainly I thought it would be, between Dallas being Dallas, Giants being the Giants, Washington still having a very good offense but not as good a defense. And now the Eagles have a lot of work to do, and they still have to decide. You tell me. I don't know if Carson, if Wentz is the man. I just don't know. 22 for 42, 170 yards, no touchdowns, 1 pick against a very good Ravens defense. You know, he also had that rushing TD, which was a big play in the game as well.
Sure.
And Ryan Matthews ran it pretty well against the Ravens, so we'll have to see what happens. But yeah, I think this is absolutely a throw out the record game, as I think most NFC East games are and have been for years.
No, I absolutely agree with you. We're on the line with my man Steve Callis, Callis from Marks, Joe Stazak, and Steve Callis. Thanks for everyone who is joining us right now. You mentioned the Redskins, and they had a home game against the Panthers, the NFC incumbent champions, and, you know, that team has kind of been a disaster this year. I'm talking about the Panthers, but the Redskins did not look in sync from the kickoff, and they, you know, they turned the ball over, they did some things. They looked like they just came out and were out-energied by the Carolina Panthers, who punched them in the mouth continually. They just never got it going. They dropped some opportunities, some passes late in the game. We could have got back in the game. Skins done, 7-6-1.
Much as it hurts me to say it, I think so. I mean, I think I like Washington, as you know. Cousins, 32 for 47 for 300 yards, 1 touchdown, no picks again. But a brutal fumble early in the second half. You know, they recovered on the 1-yard line and went in for a score. That was a big difference in the game. I know Jordan Reed is hurt, but he also lost his mind throwing that punch at Coleman to get ejected.
Right.
And then I was not aware of this stat, and I wonder if you're a gambler, if you would have jumped on this stat. The Washington is now 1-16 at home on Monday Night Football over like the last 20 years or something.
Versus the spread or just straight up?
Just straight up. And the only game they won, which I remember, the only game they won was back in 2012. They beat the Giants by 1 point. So they're 2 points away I don't know if you believe in those gambling stats over a 20-year span, but that's the stat I saw. They're 1-16 at home on Monday nights, and that's Monday Night Football at home, Washington, over like the last 20 years. Pretty amazing. But I hope they win their last two. I don't know if that gets them in, but I think they're a dangerous team. You don't want to play Washington because they have such a great offense. And Carolina, you want to talk about an up-and-down team. It's of course, it is Carolina. So I don't know where they're going. They're not going anywhere this year. But, you know, give them credit for playing hard and winning a game on the road.
Yes.
Washington, you know, Washington – they lost their first two at home, so I know they have at least, I don't know their whole schedule, but they have at least three home losses, and it's hard to make the playoffs when you have at least three home losses.
Yes, they started out the season. Remember 0-2 when the season was on the brink? They go to MetLife, and they win against the Giants. The opener was against the Steelers, by the way, on Monday Night Football at home, and they got whack-a-dude. They looked completely out of sync. Cousins, you know, looked like he lost all his confidence. I'm glad he came back to being Kirk Cousins, but They're a team that's kind of on the cusp, and you know we'll see. They got the Giants next week in the finale, and you know we'll see that. And again, that's one of those throw out the records kind of games. And Kirk Cousins
absolutely
is very dangerous, and you know we shall see. So it's going to get a little interesting. Actually, it's already interesting. But you mentioned the Seahawks, your team, your town, and I'm on board with you with the Seahawks, although they're a little unpredictable, a little unstable. They beat the Rams, which isn't exactly anything to text home about. And that's coming off of a throttling to the hands of Aaron Rodgers, where Russell Wilson had his worst day as the Seahawk. But they looked okay, 24-3. Their offensive line needs some work. Their running game, you know, if they're going to go anywhere, needs to help Russell Wilson out a little bit. And I know you said if you had to pick today, you're still on board with them. But where's that confidence level? Where's your confidence level in the Seahawks, you know, heading into the postseason?
Well, not as strong as it was, simply because they've lost Earl Thomas and they're not the same defense. You know, they held Jared Goff to 3 points. That doesn't really mean a whole lot. Aaron Rodgers shredded them. No, and look, nothing against Jared Goff. I mean, you know what?
No,
you got John Fossil.
I understand.
This looks like the new thing. Don't make your offensive or defensive coordinator the interim head coach, because then they can still be the offensive and defensive coordinator. John Fossil, I'm sure you know, son of Jim Fossil, who took the Giants to the Super Bowl to know that he was going to get hammered by the Ravens before the game even started. One of the most lopsided Super Bowls of all time. But, you know, I just thought the whole, and this has been beaten to a pulp, but this whole Pete Carroll fake punt up 24-3 with 5 minutes left. And, you know, a few things happened here, but I just wanted to read a couple of quotes because I don't know, Pete Carroll, in my opinion and the opinion of many, made the worst play call in the history of the Super Bowl, history of football in that Super Bowl.
Yes.
And now he's running the fake punt up 24-3. Now, what would be your worries if you're up 24-3? His quote was, you're either competing or you're not competing. Well, Pete Carroll's not going to tell the whole world about competing and not competing, because he might be a great competitor, but there's tens of millions of great competitors. That's such a stupid comment, because the problem with that is, what happens if you run a fake punt and your punter gets a concussion? What happens if you run a fake punt and one of your linemen, you know, gets cut running downfield or something and gets hurt? That's what you're afraid of. It's not about competing or not competing. The game is over, but you have to compete. So for him to say you're either competing or not competing is absurd. And then he said in his press conference, quote, I don't expect that you can see it from our perspective. Well, that's utterly ridiculous as well. So what is this guy saying? And then his final comment, my personal favorite, it worked perfectly except for the end. You know, well, Mrs. Lincoln, besides the assassination, how'd you like the play? Hey, Pete Carroll, besides your punter getting a concussion, that play was great, wasn't it? And if you saw it during the game, and I did, he was smiling on the sidelines because it had worked. Now, maybe he didn't know his punter had a concussion, but he certainly knew his punter got hammered and was down on the ground. It was so weird. It's not unlike that weird feeling you got when he decided to pass the ball. And plus, you probably saw in that game Richard Sherman – after the game, Richard Sherman commenting on when they had a first and goal at the one and they threw it and it almost got intercepted. And Richard Sherman went over and yelled at Pete Carroll right during the game. And afterwards, Richard Sherman you know, he's never going to hold anything back. He said, yeah, we've had some experience with that first and goal, at, you know, first throwing the ball out first. I mean, it was like a comedy routine. So, and then Pete Carroll, oh, yeah, we had a long talk about it and everything's good. I think Pete Carroll has a basic misunderstanding of certain things. The reason you don't try those plays to me is twofold. You don't want to get anybody hurt. But the second reason is, let's suppose they're playing, you know, they play twice a year, right? Let's suppose they're playing next year, and it's a close game,
yep.
and it's for Seattle to win the division or get into the playoffs, and they've got that fake punt play set up. Well, now the Rams are going to be ready for it. So you can tell me all about
tape.
Yeah, you can tell me all about the, well, we were looking for the look, and it didn't matter what part of the game it was, and so what, it was at the end of the game, blah, blah. You can say that all you want, but now you've just taken one of your best plays out of the playbook, but hey, it worked
yep.
really well in the 24-3 game with 5 minutes left, and you kind of got a concussion. It's so stupid that I don't think he can see the average perspective. I'm not talking about my perspective, just the average perspective of one watching a football game. So I thought that was absurd, but that's just me.
Is that a trend with Pete Carroll in terms of off-the-wall moments, remarks, decision-making? Does that have anything to do with his success at USC and being in a different level of football where his team was so head and shoulders above others? Or is it just Pete Carroll being a little bit of a maverick, a rogue type of coach that just, you know, kind of doesn't go by the book and tries things, by feel, whatever that feel is?
I don't know, because my view of Pete Carroll is he has a basic misunderstanding at certain times, and you'll recall I'm one of the few guys in America who would even defend the pass, not because I think it's remotely an intelligent play in the Super Bowl I'm talking about, but again, had he gone play action to Marshawn Lynch, who had
sure.
not been stopped on first contact the entire game. I went back and watched that game. Every time he was hit, he moved forward for two more yards, and you were on the one.
Yep.
So. At least I tried to help him by saying if he had gone play action to Lynch, you would have had two guys in the end zone waving because they would be so open because the 10 guys were going to dive into the line of scrimmage. So
yep.
I think he outthinks himself. I don't think this is about being a rogue or being – I think he just thinks too much sometimes, and somehow he came to the conclusion that throwing the ball after Lynch had run over everybody – and over the Patriots most of the game was a good play, and somehow a fake punt up by 21 with 5 minutes left, he kind of forgot the potential injury factor or, frankly,
sure.
giving the play away for next year, and then maybe
absolutely.
It dawned on him, you know, when the punter was lying on the ground with a concussion. and I really felt after the Super Bowl, he felt he had to come up with an excuse. And I really feel
yep.
here he had to come up with, oh, you guys won't understand, but, you know, you're either competing or you're
right.
not. I don't understand how
right.
a punt wasn't competing at that stage of an NFL game up 21 against a team. They couldn't have scored 21 points in 12 quarters, never
right.
mind in 5 minutes. I mean, to me, it's beyond stupid, frankly.
You got to be smart there. You just have to be smart. It's not about the win at that point. You got to protect your players and, you know, pack it in, play for another day. You're going to the playoffs. And I agree with you, Steve. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Steve Callis, Callis Remarks with Joe Stazek, and Steve Callis. I want to talk about the pack a little bit because I'm watching – I was in Florida, and I could only stream the Eagles on like this little iPad. And but I got the Bears on the other TV, and both good endings. One I could see a little bit more clearly. But I'm watching the Bears stage a comeback against the Pack, and they get to the three-yard line first and goal, and that's when Wentz started doing his thing. So I lost focus a little bit, and then they got a holding penalty. The Bears did, and they ended up kicking a field goal, which gave Aaron Rodgers not too much time, and an incompletion, a minus 1 yard pass, and then 60 yards up top to Jordy Nelson. They kick a field goal. You know, for all intents and purposes, that game is going in overtime to me, and then I'm looking down at the Eagles, and all of a sudden I see them like Mason Crosby kicking a field goal to win it. I mean, Aaron Rodgers did this last year and won a playoff game when they knocked off the Skins. He started to come on, and they were having real struggles this year, and they've really turned their program around. They struggled a little bit with the Bears, obviously, but that's a huge win. Did Aaron Rodgers do anything for you this weekend that you didn't know of Aaron Rodgers before?
Well, only that he's now continued to make this enormous comeback. I know people are talking about him for MVP, but he was pretty awful for about seven or eight games there. So I don't know how he's in the mix for that. But you know, Packers Bears, it's another one of those talk about throw out the record games.
Sure.
And you know, the Bears are playing much better, but I think Aaron Rodgers just does these things, and now he really is in sync. Early on with Jordy Nelson, was it Jordy Nelson was still injured, or was the Rodgers-Jordy Nelson thing it just needed some time because Nelson hadn't played in such a long time? But now it's, well, I tell you what, if Rodgers could have thrown that ball a little farther, they would have scored a touchdown on that play. He actually had to wait
yep.
for it, and
yes.
when he caught it, he pretty much just kind of fell down as opposed to being wrapped up.
Yep.
So, no, you're not surprised when Aaron Rodgers does it. You're surprised only because he didn't do it the first 6, 7, 8 games of the year. But now the Packers are back. Having said all that, as usual, their Achilles heels, at least the last few years, is going to be their defense. You know, the Bears scored a lot of points. People are moving the ball on the Packers. But another team you probably don't want to play if they get into the playoffs, only because of the experience of Rodgers, and he's back, and Jordy Nelson is back. So they're another dangerous out if they get to the playoffs.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting as well. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers, you know, can't do too much wrong. No touchdowns for Aaron Rodgers and his team putting up 30 points against the Bears, but Ty Montgomery had a huge game for the Pack. And here they go again, putting it, you know, together late, making the run. Real quick before we move on from this squad, Matt Barkley, every week I watch him, and again, I have a preconceived notion of him because I watched him in Philadelphia. He didn't get a real good opportunity to play, but he moped a little bit when Tim Tebow came to town, and he was a little defensive about, you know, who's the third-string quarterback going into his rookie season.
Right.
And he didn't do much. I think he started a game against the Giants, and, hey, listen, you know, it was a rookie season and didn't do all that well. I like what he's doing. I know he had three picks, but he had a couple touchdowns and put his team in a good position to beat the Packers. In the last few weeks, he seems to really have command, control, and if they didn't drop 8 passes in the fourth quarter or 7 passes against Tennessee, would have another win. Anything going on there with Matt Barkley and this team moving forward? Jay Cutler injured, not playing the rest of the season. Any mix-up there possibly? Is he making a case for Cutler to maybe be expendable?
I think he's absolutely making the case. I don't know what the money is, but it has to be a lot cheaper for him than Cutler.
Yes.
I think he's earned himself a job somewhere. I think it might very well be in Chicago. I think a lot will depend now. What was that, his third game, I think? I think a lot will depend on how he plays the last 2 weeks. Then
sure.
You'll have at least a minor body of work, almost as long as Brock Osweiler's, which I assume we'll talk about at some point. He got $72 million for like 7 or 8 games. But I think, yeah, I think Barkley has put himself in a position to have a starting job next year, and it might be with the Bears. I just don't know what they think because they didn't go to him earlier in the year when Cutler was semi-injured or not playing well, unlike what they just did, frankly, in Houston, where they're benching their $72 million man and going forward as well. I'm sure you've heard that. So, yeah, I do think he's earned himself at least a chance for a job. I don't know what the contracts are, only to know that Cutler is, you know, going to make a lot more money than Barkley is. So, yeah,
sure.
I think he has, but I think still a lot will depend on the next 2 games for him. You know, people were talking about, oh, it depends how Dak Prescott plays this week because he was falling off the last 2 weeks, and then he had one of the, you know, greatest games ever, percentage-wise anyway. So I think the quarterback job in the NFL, as you know, is a week-to-week job, but if you can put together – really 4, 5, 6, 8 weeks, again, see Brock Osweiler, you can make a name for yourself. Tom Savage is going to get a chance now as well because he played well, and now he's going to be the starter. So these guys, when they get a chance, you know, we always look at them as backups, but some of them have rarely played. And you don't know till you drop him in the fire. Who thought Dak Prescott was going to get dropped into the fire here and play as well as he played? Admittedly, with a great offensive line and an excellent running back, that's a good spot for him. But you just don't know if your game translates until you get out there and play. And the Jets are the opposite. They're seeing essentially, you know, 3 or 4 guys now who really just quite can't do it. So it's a week-to-week thing, and if you get your chance, you better take your chance when you get it because they don't come along very often.
You may not get another one anytime soon. I agree with you. Tom Savage, the young man out of Pitt, big strapping quarterback, 6'4", 230. He's going to get the start this coming week. And the Texans made a comeback, and they got it done 21-20 over Jacksonville, who has released their coach, Gus Bradley. Kind of knew it was coming. A little weird, firing him. He has to fly the charter home. Your thoughts on that whole situation, the awkwardness, and maybe did they need to fire him with a couple games left in the season?
Yeah.
Wasn't
like
the Chip Kelly thing where they could not get him out of the building fast enough. your thoughts on what they did with Gus Bradley?
Yeah, I don't understand it. You know, by all accounts, you hear every guy, Herm Edwards, all of these professional football lifers saying Gus Bradley is one of the most well-liked guys and he's an excellent coach, maybe not an excellent head coach, but they haven't had much talent there. You know, do you think like a Tom Coughlin's going to come back to that team? I don't know, because that's such a building. You know, Coughlin, I think makes the Hall of Fame, not just because of the Giants two things, but you know, he was the coach of Jacksonville before there was a Jacksonville, and then a few years in, he had him at 14-2. So I think they should have let him ride it out. If you're going to let him go this far, they're not going, you know. And by all accounts also, the Jaguars were still playing hard for him, so that's kind of weird. I think it would have been, I'll just say this, I think it would have been classier to let him play out the string, and then on Black Monday when, you know, five guys get fired, he would be one of five guys. And then to go back on the charter with a team that apparently loves him. You know, I think it was not a whole lot of class. And I don't know if you think, but I don't know that these owners have a whole lot of class. You know, there's ways to treat these people, and I think a lot of times the owners just don't. And nobody, I don't think, was saying, oh, this is fantastic, they fired him now as opposed to 2 weeks from now. And again, by all accounts, this guy's a classy guy and a good coach. And he'll find a job next year, not as a head coach, of course, but he'll find a job because he's well-liked and viewed to be an excellent coach. So we'll see what happens. But no, I don't think it was handled the right way at all.
No, I completely agree with you. It's a shame. To me, that's an emotional decision, you know, blowing a lead. What do they have, a 9-point lead in the fourth quarter or a 12-point lead? And they you know, gave it away. And, you see emotional decisions. And it's just, to me, like you said, it lacks class, dignity. He's a likable guy. Now, unlike Chip Kelly, who was not a very likable guy here after 3 years and some of the things he did behind the scenes and the bridges he burned, where everyone, you know, could not escort him from the building fast enough. This is a situation where, you know, like you said, Gus Bradley, very well liked, and unfortunately, you know, it's kind of life in the big leagues, but it could have been done a little differently. I agree with you, Steve Callis. Callis Remarks with Joe Stajak and Steve Callis. Going over week 15, looking ahead to week 16 as well. You talked about the Chiefs a little bit, and, you know, they dropped one of the Titans. Don't look now, the Titans are 8-6. Marcus Mariota, Chiefs 10-4. My man Tyreek Hill, he gets a head of steam going. He is just electrifying and dynamite. And to me, he's the most dynamic, you know, player in the league right now. Alex Smith, you know, the Andy Reid as a guy who's a little more than a game manager. I think you've referred to him as not a game manager. I forget, maybe a notch above game manager.
Yes.
But 10-4, Andy Reid, again, has them poised, but they seem to lack something when they get to the postseason. I know they played the Brady bunch last year, and they gave up that big lead to Indianapolis a few years ago when T.Y. Hilton, like, you know, caught four passes for like 700 yards, and they came back from 24 down in the second half, and they won that game. But might this guy, Tyreek Hill, be good enough, because he does do it on special teams and as a receiver, and he runs the ball too sometimes. Is he a guy who could put this team, give them that edge that might make a difference come the postseason this time around, or is it still all about the quarterback?
You know, Tyreek Hill is what you said. He's a weapon. He's kind of a Beckham running back, if you will, because he ran 68 yards and didn't get touched. I mean, when does that happen? And once he's in the clear, people aren't going to touch him. And it wasn't that he ran away from everybody. He made, you know, three or four guys miss. So having said that, you look at this game. This is the problem to me with Kansas City. If you're watching this game, which I was, 14-0. 0 degrees. Marcus Mariota, oh, I never played in high school under 75. I never played at Oregon under 40. And you're like, how's this guy even going to be able to do anything? But, you know, sure enough, they came back, and Ryan Succop, you know, I don't know what you think about calling timeout to ice the guy. It's now gone both ways, and clearly it didn't work here. They called the timeout just as he was kicking, and he came up like two or three yards short, and then he got another chance. Now, if you make the first one, you could say, it was a great call to make a timeout, but what about this situation where you do it, it's 10 degrees, it's 53, what are you trying to make him think about it? He even said after the game, I was kicking it as hard as I could possibly kick it. I don't usually do that, but I didn't even think I could make it, and he didn't the first time, but give him another chance. And sure enough, he got it over, and it just didn't eke over. You know, it probably would have been good from like 56. And that cost you a game. That cost you probably a chance to win the division. I guess they can still mathematically win it. But it's always something. Andy Reid, I think, is an excellent coach, but you can do chapter and verse on him at Philly, where they always seem to kind of be there, always almost there, always, always, maybe, maybe. But I just don't think they can get there. And frankly, if they have to go to if they have to go to New England, they got thrashed in New England last year. I think it was 30-7. But it's too big of a hill for them to climb. I think they are a very good team. I think you're right. Tyreek Hill is a wild card. But I don't think it's enough to get them to a Super Bowl. And this game, I think, is the example of it. To lose that game for, Arrowhead used to be an incredibly impossible place to play. They're winning 14-0 at 0 degrees. They're playing a guy from Hawaii. But I give him a lot of credit. I mean, I give Mariota a lot of credit. But the Titans come back and win that game in a game I didn't. It was almost a turn off the TV game in my mind. I didn't, but it was almost a turn off the TV game at 14-0 and, even 17-7. But that's why you keep the games on. But to kick that field goal, that might be the most incredible field goal of the year, which will kind of slip under the radar, depending on what Kansas City does forward looking.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to say I engage in schadenfreude when I watch Andy Reid do something stupid. I've seen plenty of it, but there is something when I see him do something dumb, I just kind of smile and say, well, you guys have him now. He's your issue. I remember last year, I think, one of the first games of the season, they did not need to I think they could have taken a knee, but they ran Jamal Charles, and he fumbled, and Denver picked it up and ran it back, and I think that Denver was down three. It was one of those – wasn't quite a Joe Pisarcik, Herm Edwards play, but it was one of those where Andy didn't need to do that, and it cost him. And and I agree with you. They are a team that does some good things, and they do some crazy things at times, but I don't think they quite have the guy under center – who's going to instill a lot of confidence. I do like Macklin. Watched him for a long time here in Philly. Travis Kelce. I don't know if you've seen that train wreck of a show he's on. It's like The Bachelor with. It's called Catching Kelce, and his brother's in it too. It's one of those shows where it's so bad, but you have to watch it because you have to see what happens next. And watching the difference in terms of what he does on Sunday versus what I see on that show, it's amazing that he's that good, Travis Kelce, but I still think that they're – and with Tyreek Hill, another amazing weapon, but I still think there might be a quarterback and a head coach just shy of having enough do some damage in the postseason, enough to get them into the Super Bowl, especially when the Brady Bunch, are still hanging around, and, they're going to be tough to get past, which leads us to – the Brady Bunch. They go into Denver. I don't want to call it a rematch. This has nothing to do with the Super Bowl necessarily. Certainly not nearly what was at stake last February, but they're so well coached, and they do the right things, and they make the right plays. And I know they got Brady versus Trevor Siemian, which is, a mismatch made in heaven. But 12-2 now are the Patriots, and a pretty sound victory in Denver this past weekend. Your thoughts on the Patties? They're still winning. They're moving on without Gronkowski. Julian Edelman, he looks like Jerry Rice at times with some of the catches he makes and some of the things he does. Still amazes me. Can they move on without Gronkowski and, do the deal and get it done with what else they have to compete with in the AFC? I'm not sure who's going to give them that run, but someone will step up, but I'm not sure anyone's good enough to knock off, the Kings of the Hill.
Yeah, I think they can make that run, and I think they will make that run. And Brady 2-7 in Denver. He's lost some brutal games there.
Yes.
And I was surprised because I think, was it, did Sims do the game? I think it was Sims. He kept saying how well Simeon was playing and how well he was playing and how well he was playing. I'm like, they can't even score. I think Phil Sims is the best. I hope it was Phil Sims.
Yeah,
I don't
very
want to
good.
About him. I think he was, I think he's the best color commentator in the NFL. I really do. And it's not just a
very
giant
good.
Bias, but,
no.
But he kept telling me how Simeon was making great throws and this and that. The Patriots have always been, even in their best defensive years, even in their bad defensive years, you can get a lot of yardage on them between the 20s. It's very hard to score on them. And this was just another example of that. So I think they can do it without Gronkowski. Losing Gronkowski is a big loss, but I'll tell you, it's not like losing Earl Thomas if you're Seattle, because they have
sure.
these other guys, you know, who can – I'm not going to say take Gronkowski's place. I think when he's healthy, he's probably the best tight end in the history of football. The problem for him
yep.
now career-wise is, you know, and I've said this to you before on the air, my son says they should just rest him to the playoffs every year. You know, I think Brady is ahead this year, even though he doesn't want to be suspended for four games. I think missing the first four games turns out to be a plus. He's still fresh. He's an MVP candidate, in my opinion, because nobody else has really jumped up to claim – I'm the lock MVP, but I think they did what they had to do. This is a huge win for them, not because they're going to face Denver again. If they do, it'll be in Foxborough this year, but it's been a real bugaboo for Brady and the Patriots in Denver. He still has a losing record against Denver overall,
sure.
but, you know, they Blunt with his 15th rushing touchdown, the most in the history of the New England Patriots, but I like their
Patriots.
Other backs, the faster, quicker, darting Deion Lewis.
Yep.
White is one of those guys, but Blunt is the big, you know, he can run around the corner. He's the rare combination of power and speed, but you need
yes.
him to beat down guys, and I think that became apparent later in the game, and that's kind of the plan. So I don't even know if Denver is going to make the playoffs, but you don't want to play Denver in the playoffs. They still have an excellent defense, but that's a huge
yep.
win for the Patriots, and I don't see who's going to stop them from at least getting to the Super Bowl. Again, if I had to pick right now, I'd pick what I picked before the year, Patriots over Seattle, and I haven't seen a whole lot. It's been up and down, but I haven't seen a whole lot to change my mind, and I'm just not sold on Dallas, especially watching the two Giant games. You know, I think the Lions, I'm not going to say they're going to beat them this week. I'm sure we'll do the pick soon, but the Lions
sure.
are just plugging in the two Giant tapes, and they're going to do what the Giants did, and I think that's put incredible pressure on Prescott, and see what happens.
No, and we are going to get to our picks in about 3 minutes. I want to talk about Dallas real quick. 9-point fourth quarter, another comeback victory. Again, not a lot of flash. It wasn't sexy. And, of course, Jameis Winston, you know, never met a snap. He didn't turn the ball over in the fourth quarter, it seemed like. Dallas continues to win. They continue to find ways to get it done. I want your thoughts on them. I want your thoughts on are they getting a little too big for themselves? You know, I've always liked Zeke. He's getting a little, you know, with his celebrations and whatnot. I don't really care about celebrations, but I'm watching this team maybe get a little too big for their britches, and that sometimes can hurt you in the karma game. But and also wanted to ask you your thoughts on Jameis Winston real quick, because I was never a huge fan. Tampa Bay took him over Marcus Mariota first overall. He's good and he's bad, and sometimes he's somewhere in the middle. Your thoughts on Dallas and Jameis Winston real quick.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, Dallas is for real in the league as we see it now. Do I think they're going to win the Super Bowl? No. Do I think they're going to get to the Super Bowl? No. But, you know, it's interesting, at least the big story in New York is Elliott jumps into the Salvation Army bin, and everybody thinks it's the cutest thing in the world. The NFL doesn't fine him. Beckham kisses the net, or whatever the hell he did with the net, where the net hit him in the head the first time, and then
hit
he made
in the
up.
Head.
And, but he got, nobody remembers, he got fined for that. So
yes,
I don't
did.
Like Beckham complaining. But he's right. He should shut up. But he's right when he says, if I did that, if Odell Beckham jumped into the Salvation Army, you know he would have got fined, because he got fined for doing whatever the heck he did with the kicking net. So there is kind of a double standard, but Beckham has brought
yep.
that upon himself. As for Dallas, look, they're for real. They can beat anybody on any given Sunday.
Sure.
They just haven't caught me in terms of playoff experience. The main guys have none. It's a different game in the playoffs. If you get Seattle coming into Dallas, do I think Dallas could win that game? Yes, I do. But that's more a function of Seattle not being as good on the road, mainly, I think, because they don't have Earl Thomas. Their defense on the road has been terrible, and the beauty of Seattle and the Patriots has been, over the last 5 years, I'll say, their defense travels. The question to me in the playoffs is whose defense travels. And if you got home advantage all through to the Super Bowl, that's okay. But if you don't, then what happens? And I think Seattle in Dallas would be a great game. And I'm not prepared to pick that game just yet, although that might wind up being the game. But, yeah, I do think Dallas is for real. As for Jameis Winston, I'm kind of with you. He's a talented guy. He had one of the dumbest penalties in the history of football the other day when he handed off, you know, they had first and goal at the 8. He handed off,
yes,
and his running back was getting gang tackled at like the 12 or 13. And Winston went over to do what? Help him or block for him? And he pointed to the ref when the guy was just tackling him. And then when the play was over, he headbutted the guy. He headbutted the guy,
sure,
and got a 15-yard penalty. They went from first and goal from the 8 to the 13 to the 28. And, of course, they had to kick a field goal when they really needed a touchdown there. So I think he's still got, you know, and he says all the right things after the game. I can't do that, I can't do that, I can't do that. But, you know, it's like the guy who doesn't run hard to first because he thinks he had a home run and he gets thrown out at second. Yeah, I should have run hard, I can't do that. Yeah, you can't do that, but you can't do it before you hit the ball. You can't headbutt the guy before you headbutt him. I mean, it's not like you learn something new. So
right.
I'm kind of with you on Winston as well, although he's a talented guy.
He is a talented guy out of Florida State. He got a lot of credit when he was his second year coming off the championship year for all the comebacks, you know, against Louisville, against Miami, Georgia Tech. But he had thrown like 3 interceptions in the first half of each of those games to put his team down, but then he got it together in the second half and he would do his thing. And again, I'm looking at the dichotomy of this guy. He's very talented, but a little unstable at times. But it's his second year, and we'll give the young man a chance going forward. And we have about 4 minutes left, Steve Callis. Your picks last week, how did you do, and what do you got this week?
2-1 last week, like the Patriots over the Broncos, like the Steelers over the Bengals. Boy, the Steelers were in trouble, but then they came back. Unfortunately, also like the Ravens over the Eagles, and I give the Eagles some credit, but I also am kind of disappointed in the Ravens, especially since they're, you know, on the – I mean, look, they won, so what do they care?
Yes.
But, you know, they're on the verge of playing for first place this week. So 2-1. Still over 500, hoping to go more this week. This week I'm going 3 games. I like the Seahawks -9 over the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals aren't, you know, I'm not saying they don't care, but the Seahawks at home, they're 2 different teams, the Seahawks at home and the Seahawks on the road. So I like the Seahawks -9 over the Cardinals. I like the Lions. The line I have is in the New York Daily News is Cowboys 7.5. So I'll take the Lions. I thought they played the Giants very tough. And while I think Dallas is very good, they don't have a Beckham who can get that extra touchdown to kind of, you know, put the game out of reach or win the game. So if necessary, I'll take the backdoor cover if the Cowboys are up 14 late. So I'll take Lions +7.5 in Dallas. And then the third game, I'm going to go Titans over the Jaguars. I think a lot of the Jaguars players, the notion to me that they're going to go out and kill themselves now that they fired the coach and he took the plane home with them. And the Titans are playing for a lot now. So I like the Titans -4.5 on the road in Jacksonville, where I know it won't be 0 degrees. So those are my 3 picks. How about you?
All right. We got about 1.5 minutes left. I'll just go over mine. I think I had 2 of the same picks. I had the Pats, Patriots over Denver, and that was, you know, people listening to the show know I have the Pats every week. They're a standard pick. The Ravens, they won the game, but like you said, didn't get it done. The backdoor cover by the Eagles. I had the Giants. I thought that I liked Detroit. I've been on them all season. I just thought that line was a little high. I thought that told me something. I guess it did. They won by 11, so I go 2-1 last week. This week, obviously New England again. That's one of my standard picks, like I just said. A lot of points, 16.5. Wouldn't usually do that, but not going to handicap a handicap season when I'm just taking them across the board. I like the Eagles, too. They're getting 2.5. Hosting the Giants, have a chance to do something. They're not saving their season by winning tomorrow night's national televised game. I know everyone likes to look pretty for a national audience. Doesn't always happen, but I also thought that line should have been 3, 3.5. Giants favorite. I thought that line's a little low, and I like your pick as well. 7.5 points, Detroit with Dallas, and Dallas doesn't really blow out too many folks, and you know the Lions can be explosive, although they were held to 6 points by the Giants. That's an amazing thing, and 46 points. The Bradys and the Aaron Rodgers this past weekend, their offenses put up not a touchdown between them. I thought that was interesting. Usually those guys put up some gaudy numbers, especially when their teams do. Steven, always a pleasure, my friend. We'll catch up with you next week. And Merry Christmas, pal. I hope you have a nice one, or happy holidays, happy whatever you do. Happy Hanukkah to everyone out there. Whatever you do, enjoy yourself, and we'll catch you next week.